It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hey, everybody, welcome on in. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us. Alex Geary, Scott Mitchell. And if you're like the hosts of KSL's Unrivaled, then you did some sports information studying today, but you also were all over the Daybell case in Idaho. If you're like Scott and I, it was basically like a soap opera during our show prep talking about the goings on in Idaho. And so, but
it's a train wreck. There's no question about it.
We have a lot of stuff to get through. We have a lot of things. Scott, everything okay on your end? Everything kosher?
Yeah, you know, everything's very nice. It's all copacetic.
There you go. Scott, always with the silver lining, and we're going to keep it going. We're going to start with, look, in about 15 minutes, you're going to hear from our BYU insider from KSLSports.com, Mitch Harper, host of Cougar Sports Saturday, because today is the first day, basically, of fall camp for BYU. Not basically. They started practices today. And that's usually a massive bit of news. And we did not give enough emphasis to this. And we're going to do that now. We're going to hear some sound from today's first practice down from Provo. It's our 7:05 cut. Let's go ahead and do it.
The cut at 7:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, so everybody reports, everybody got their gear. Those things haven't changed, Scott. Nike delivered on all of the gear in their lockers, so nothing held up there. And actual practices were happening, which is interesting because, I don't know, how did you treat the first day of fall camp when you were a college kid up at the University of Utah? And it must have been totally different. You certainly didn't get nearly the amount of socks that you get now and all the gear that comes with it. But what were your thoughts going into your first day of camp when you were a college athlete?
The first day was always really stressful. And a lot of it is there's so much – it's like paperwork. Whenever you go somewhere, you have to fill out all the paperwork kind of thing. So it's all about
that
testing.
First day paperwork.
It's physicals. It's just a bunch of – things that have nothing to do with football. This never changed. I mean, it was high school, college, professionally. The first day, first couple of days were so stressful to me. And it wasn't because I was back. It was just because you had to do all this stuff that was just, it was just kind
of. Well, they kind of got the administrative stuff out of the way. They weighed themselves, did all that stuff, I think, the other day. And today it was, the doctor will call you when he's ready. And they're ready now. So Kalani Sitake, the head coach, he reported to practice today, players reporting, everybody getting down and dirty, actually doing the actual practicing. And so in my mind, I'm like, this is the start of the season. This is why we got to get some emphasis here going on. So a couple things go through your head if you're a BYU fan. What's going on at the quarterback position? That's always the question. But what's going on with how ready your team is? Because now it's a bunch of peripheral questions that have to do with the season that have nothing to do with opponents, with position groups. It's about kind of whatever they're trying to plan on. And so starting up August 4th, what exactly are they planning on? Here's what Coach Kalani Sitake had to say about that.
I really feel good about our group and all the uncertainties and things that are happening. I mean, I think our only goal is to try to be ready for whatever happens. And hopefully we get those opportunities to play this fall. And if we do, and we'll be ready by then.
This is really nice for Kalani because they don't know when they're going to play. And they haven't had spring football. They haven't had a lot of practice. So it's going to give the coaches a really good idea of where this team really is. Because you just don't know. I mean, you don't know with the limited practice time. You don't know with a lot of things that are happening. You know, you leave these players out there to kind of work it out on their own, and you just don't know where they are. So having the ability to assess the players and not have a hard deadline. You know, like, we got a game in a month. It's like, now we probably have a game in maybe a month and a half, maybe 2 months. I don't know. So it kind of takes that pressure, and they'll have the ability to kind of figure out what they need to do and where they're kind of weak,
right,
and they can kind of work things. The other side of that, if I'm a player, Alex, I'm hating this right now.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness, because you don't know when you're going to play.
Well, and that's what's interesting is I was wondering how guys show up, because you have the choice as a coach. You can say I think guys show up about the same, not person to person, but, you know, I think college kids in general, if you're a head coach, you have some guys who totally work their butts off during the summer. And then you have some guys who you always say, you know, are a biscuit shy of 300 pounds, and you kind of got to get them going during fall camp, during practice. But if you're a coach, you have to present it in a couple of ways, because you're also speaking to your team, right? This is something I've learned from you. You're talking to the media, but you're kind of speaking to your team. And when you do that and you say, oh, we are just doing awesome. Look, we are amazed. We have just – my guys during the offseason have been totally prepping. We've been really impressed with how they came to camp this year. So that was one thing that he brought up. But aside from that, you do have to deal with the scheduling stuff. You do have to deal with exactly how they're going to do it. Here's what Kalani said about scheduling.
There's so many different variables, and a lot of it is not what we control. It's not we make the demands and everything. I've been really pleased with the way Tom's doing it. He's got a really tough job, and I'm just saying, let's just get ready to go. You know, my job is to get the team ready, not to do the schedules and things like that. That's Tom, and I trust him in it. So we'll just be ready whenever they're asking us to play.
The big question, Scott,
yeah.
look, that's all they can do. The thing is you said it. I think you're exactly right. It's nice for Kalani, because on the one hand you go, look, we're going to try to get ready, whatever it's going to be. But all you can do is just bust your tail now. All you can do is just say, look, we don't have any control over the scheduling, because that's not our thing. That's Tom's thing. And he put it back on the athletic director. Look, they're going to figure that out. That's fine. So I'm going to ask – that's something I want to ask Mitch when he comes on, is what exactly does it mean when they're practicing this early? I say this early because their first game is going to be just under 2 months from right now, when they're scheduled to play Utah State. And I'm interested to see if that game even goes off, or where we're going to be with that, or if it means they're scheduling something else. This is where I wanted you to read between the lines, Scott, because the quarterback question was asked. Even during the middle of a pandemic, all we want to know is the starting quarterback. Who's the starting quarterback? I know we're in the middle of all this thing. So the question was asked about how confident Coach Kalani Sitake is in the depth at quarterback, and here was his total non-response.
I saw a lot of good things from all the quarterbacks. They're all healthy and looking really good. Mm. Zach, Jaron, Baylor, those guys did a great job. And then Soljay did some really good things, too, as a true freshman showing up. Just surprised us a little bit, you know, and when we went to some crossover stuff. But I feel really comfortable with that group, and A-Rod's done a good job getting them all ready.
Scott, yeah. will you please
okay, here you
do
have
some
Zach
quarterback
Wilson.
Interpreting
yes.
here?
Yeah, this is a bad thing. and here's why. When you have a kid who's been your starter, it's very clear they said Zach Wilson's our starter, blah, 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 right? And they were excited about that. And when you're developing a quarterback and you want your guy to be your guy, by now, his junior year, Kalani Sitake should be saying, we've got our guy. You know, we're excited with all the development and all that's happened with Zach, and we really look good. You know, we're really excited, and we look forward to what he's going to do and where he's going to mature and how he's going to improve going into this year. When the coach says, yeah, all these guys are looking pretty good,
and it,
he's
even
basically
throws,
he's
even
letting
throws a
them
line
all know.
In for the, even throws a line in
for
the
true freshman.
Yeah.
Right, and he's letting them know. He's saying, Zach, you really haven't established yourself, and these other guys came in and actually played very well. So I'm open to anything right now. I'm really open to the guy that's going to show up consistently and help us win. And I'm not sure if it's the Romney kid, you know, because he was the one I think that played the most consistent.
You like Baylor Romney?
I do. Yeah. I did before. I mean, he's the guy that. He's just going
to
consistently.
Well, Jaron Hall didn't have to waste his time with any baseball this spring, so we know he's set for football. But it is interesting. You just go, oh, yeah, Zach, he set him in order, right? This is kind of the presumed. That's the thing is that it's kind of the presumed sort of starting order.
It's the kiss of death, Alex, when your head coach does not What? Look, you got to have a starting quarterback.
You said this. You taught me this. Your guys listen. Your guys listen to this. They hear this.
Yes.
Zach Wilson's not going to transfer out of here, out of BYU. Okay.
No, none of those guys are.
No, and so that's the thing. Is that in the end, Zach Wilson. Doesn't it just go without saying that he's the guy and the rest of the guys? He's just talking about how they're all working out together?
I'm just telling you when you have a quarterback that, like, Zach Wilson should be the marquee player on this football team by now. And he should be the one, and the coach should be touting and pushing and promoting, and this is my guy. And Kalani is not a guy that's afraid to make a move. I mean, when you fire Ty Detmer, you'll change quarterbacks.
Right.
So,
yeah. Well, listen.
I'm not sold on how convinced he is of the order and who's actually going to play and play all year.
I've still got something to play as well about the running backs. Of course, Devontae Henry Cole going up to Utah State. The question was asked about the running back group. That's one. That's a position with a lot of question marks as well. Our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, Mitch Harper, host of Cougar Sports Saturday, is going to join us next. Help us read between the lines. Tell us about the first day of practices with BYU and how things went and the virtual world that it is now to cover sports in media. Stay with us right here. It is KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio. Welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. Thanks for hanging out. Hey, BYU's first day of camp, and it kind of feels normal. Looks around the room, wonders if it feels normal. And it doesn't, but, you know, at the same time, BYU back to practices, getting their gear in their lockers, everything getting sort of set for the season. The question is when is it going to be open season for BYU to start the season? And who
it's hard, Alex.
With whom will it be? Who knows?
I know. It's hard because we're all so shell-shocked. You know, it's like, I mean, things that we thought were normal, we thought would never happen.
Right.
You know, seasons got changed.
We're trying to have a normal discussion about, like, hey, it's fall camp, everybody. Yeah. And we're, like looking, like, through gritted teeth going, yay.
When's the shoe going to drop?
Right.
You know.
So, on the program here with us, of course, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, the host of Cougar Sports Saturday, Mitch Harper. Mitch, did it feel like, aside from the fact that BYU, of course, did not allow any media there at the facility, what about today felt normal to you, if there's such a thing right now?
It felt normal to hear Kalani Sitake being optimistic about his team and just kind of hoping for a football season. It was good to hear these players and coaches talk about football a little bit. But obviously today, some of the big storylines that took place from the media session were obviously COVID-19 and actually just having a season. I think that BYU, with not knowing who they're going to play, it just made it a little bit strange, but still, it's good to know that football in some capacity is back in 2020.
Did it seem a little bit more optimistic because of the Big 12 actually going a plus one? Did you get a sense that maybe there might be more games, or has that filtered down yet?
Yeah, Kalani, you know, is kind of deferring all that to Tom Holt, but did credit Tom in terms of Holmo is communicating with Kalani and saying that he's keeping him abreast of what's happening and with the latest with scheduling. But I think there's some opportunities there with the Big 12, specifically with Oklahoma State reportedly, but also TCU and Texas Tech. And the nice thing for BYU, too, is that a lot of these Big 12 teams might not pull from their existing game inventory that they've already had scheduled for 2020. They might just abandon all the games that they already had scheduled and maybe pull a game with a BYU. So I think having that opportunity for a plus one, potentially that BYU could slide in there, you would think ESPN, that partnership the Cougars have with them, might be able to land them at least one game, you would think. But I think a lot of Cougar fans are looking at this and saying, I'll believe it when I see it at this point, because anything right. with BYU and the Big 12, they're very skeptical.
Yeah, and I think that but the idea of them starting up now, the thought was, okay, there's something working on. There's something working in the background. Is that the feeling like that they started this early because there could be the possibility of something mid-September?
You know, honestly, Alex, I think it's just simply that they got the waiver from the NCAA. Yeah. I don't think BYU has really anything concrete.
Interesting.
Right now, there's hope that they have, you know, potentially some games, some options, some plan A, B, and C, and D. But nothing is finalized to the point where they know for a fact that they're going to play August 29th or September 5th. So I think the value here is that no matter what, they're going to get some practices and some opportunities to get reps for younger players. But it's a tough situation for, you know, upperclassmen. I would hope that for BYU that they can get some of these NFL scouts potentially to this campus to watch seniors like Matt Bushman and Kyrus Tonga, because who knows, guys, this could be some of the only opportunities they play football this year.
Sure.
If in fact there isn't any game. So I think just the value of getting some reps and practices is where BYU is still going to tackle this regardless of what happens when they start the actual season.
Is there any timeline about like when they will start it, or it's just still up in the air?
Still just the second, right?
Yeah, from what I've been told, there's around August 15th, about 2 weeks before week zero, is when we should start to get kind of a clear picture potentially of what BYU's schedule is going to look like, because they need at least 2 weeks to scout and look at an opponent, because BYU's likely going to go on the road for a lot of these games, even potentially against AAC teams. I mean, BYU's going to have to travel to take a lot of these games on the road, and I think BYU is willing to do that because they want a season to be played at all cost. As long as it's safe for the players, they want to make this thing work. So I would imagine about 2 weeks is kind of the timeline I look at.
Mitch Harper, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com. You can read his byline there. Get the latest on BYU and camp starting up. We already played the inconclusive sound drop from Coach Satake about the quarterback position group. You know, everybody's doing great. It's a great position. There are players there. We know also they have names. He named all of them, including the freshmen. But the
well, most of them played though last year.
That's true. It's true, and maybe that's why he did it. But he kind of gave the non-answer. But here was the sound that he had about the running backs as well, because that's a position group everybody's been wondering about also. So take a listen.
Yeah, we're gonna be fine. Yeah, I mean, we're gonna play with the guys that are here. He was here doing our PRPs. He was here doing our workouts and stuff. He knows how good we are at our running back core. So I think we're gonna be fine. Love the group. I think Lopini is. This has been a really good off season for him.
So I know that that's probably a point of frustration. Anytime somebody bails as close to the, you know, whatever version of the season we're going to get was there. But he did mention that this running back group is okay. Do you believe that though? Do you think that they're still okay with Lopini Katoa being the probable starter there?
I would say not, guys. I think that BYU right now has got a capable running backs. I think Lopini is probably the best receiver out of the backfield, but I wouldn't feel comfortable saying he's the feature number one back that he could get maybe 15, 20 carries in a game. I wouldn't be too confident in that. He's got to still prove his way, you know, because you looked at his yards per carry average. He had fewer yards per carry than a guy like Sione Finau, who I think is the best running back BYU has. But he's still coming back from the ACL injury, and maybe a delayed start could give an opportunity for Finau to potentially play sooner rather than later. But I think that also Jax McChesney is going to be a name to keep an eye on, because he had that great performance last year against UMass, 200-plus rushing yards, but then he didn't play against San Diego State and Hawaii. Really curious to see what he can do, because speed-wise, he's probably one of the fastest guys in the program offensively. And he was someone who in high school, when he was at Lone Peak High School, competed in a speed combine. He was a finalist along with Alabama's Najee Harris, 1 and 2, as the two fastest guys out west in terms of 40 times. So McChesney's a guy that I think is the most intriguing, but I think the best running back is Finau, but he's still coming back from injury.
You know, I agree with you with the there's got to be some concern there. A year ago, they went outside into the portal, and they picked up two transfer guys at running back. And, of course, Tyson Williams was really good until he got hurt. And then they get Devontae Henry Cole. And I think they feel like, okay, we've solidified our running back position. And, unfortunately, you know, Devontae decides to, follow his girlfriend to Utah State. I don't know what he did.
But, Scott turning it into a bachelorette episode.
Yeah. And yeah. Will you accept this, Rose? and so it's a tough situation if you're BYU, because and maybe they can go out in the transfer portal, but you know that process is involved because they have to get accepted into school, and it just doesn't happen overnight. it kind of leaves you in a lurch. I mean, this happened a little bit to Utah last year when Manny Bowens just first day of camp just doesn't show up. And so I think they're a little bit concerned about this. And I don't know if there's anything they can do to shore it up. And maybe with the short or the long whatever camp season, maybe they could find another player. Do you get a sense that any of these guys who like we talked about Matt Bushman or Zane Anderson possibly transferring if BYU has a really reduced or condensed schedule this year? Is that crazy talk? Or
at
is
this
that,
point,
is
it'd
that...
be too late, wouldn't it?
I don't think it's crazy talk, but I think that if BYU has any sort of season, those guys are going to play. Now, if BYU doesn't have a season at all and somehow they're not able to put together any games, then they might look at other options, but I think those guys are committed to staying at BYU.
Mitch Harper, everybody. He writes for KSLSports.com, and he's the host of Cougar Sports Saturday right here on KSL News Radio, noon to 3.
Will you accept this rose, Alex?
And yes, I will, Scott. Okay. I appreciate it. We appreciate you joining us, Mitch, and keep us up to date if something happens down in Provo during this interesting time of fall camp.
Will do, guys.
Thanks for hanging out with us. Taking the break here, news, traffic, and weather. We come back, we've got more to talk about how the landscape of college football could look. Other conferences trying to figure out how they're going to do next season. Stay with us right here on KSL's Own Rivaled on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery. Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. We appreciate Mitch Harper joining us on the first day of BYU's fall camp. And it was virtual with the media today, and it was, you know, that's just the way it is, Scott. It's a new way of doing things. You just got to do things But hearing from some of the players and hearing how they sort of have been working through the summer, it'd be a tough thing already to try to get these 18 to 22-year-olds, you know, working out and getting in shape for all this stuff. But I can't imagine, like, during all this where you don't even know if you're going to end up playing, really keeping that motivation level up.
I think that a lot of these players are excited. I really do. I think they're itching to get out there. They're itching to go play. I think a lot of it is because they've kind of been cooped up. They've kind of been quarantined. Their
I think they've gotten some good news, and when they tell them they're practicing and stuff, I mean, they can't. You can't help but, you know, get fired up for it.
I would certainly think so, and I just feel like I think there's a certain segment that go, we see an opportunity. So we're going to kind of like strike when the iron's hot here. So this whole idea from some of these Pac-12 players to say, hey, look, we see what's going on in the world now, and here's our opportunity to maybe have some leverage. And I think some of these conferences, these schools are kind of nervous. Like, you know, these players are a little bit, you know, they have demands. They're asking for things. And I think the schools don't want to kind of get in trouble, so to speak,
right,
or not be sensitive and not listen to what these players are saying. And I said this yesterday on our show, Alex, we don't know. Like, we don't know the long-term effects of what this is going to do and how it's really going to impact people. I mean, if you look, most of the people who have significantly been impacted by this as of today are mostly elderly people. There's some people with respiratory issues that have challenges with this that are younger, but it's mostly older people that have, you know, significant issues. So you got to feel somewhat confident that young people are saying, look, I'm probably not going to be affected by this, and I'm young and I want to go out and be active and participate in my sport. And I just think a lot of them want to do that.
Scott, a couple things happened today movement wise in the conference talks, because you know, if everybody kind of, I mean, if we look at the Big Ten and we say, okay, they're going to do a conference only deal, and everybody's kind of crossing their fingers going, is the Big Ten going to bail on everybody? Because that's been the feeling from the beginning is, yeah, the Big Ten's been saying this, but you hear this rumbling behind the closed doors that their commissioner, Kevin Warren, has met with these student athletes now to get input, and they're trying to figure out whether or not they're even going to have a football season this year. And that's actually a discussion they're having, because now Rutgers has had this massive outbreak. They've got 28 players and more positive tests from staff members as well. This is something that they're going to look at and go, look, we're coming up on the we're in the first week of August. You heard Mitch talk about how next week is going to be an important time, not just for BYU, but I think across college football, where they're going to go, look, we're getting on to the second week of August. We got to start making decisions on how we're going to do this. The schedules have to be sort of solidified here. We can't be too, we can't move this massive aircraft carrier that is the scheduling world of college football on a dime here. It takes a little bit for us to be able to adjust it. In the next couple of weeks, you're going to have to see some solidified plans. Otherwise, you're not going to see those plans come to fruition.
Well, it's hard for that reason. Yeah, I mean, there has to be some planning. You look at what the Pac-12 done, and they've actually, I think, been pretty proactive and pretty smart about the flexibility they've built in their schedule. Funny how all of these Power Five schools in regular situations, they're this monopoly, right? They're holding on to college football. It's a very select group, and you're not getting into our party. But the minute a pandemic comes around, it's like everyone runs for the hills. You know, every conference for themselves. We're doing our own thing. We're the Big Ten. We don't care about the rest of you. We've got to protect our own kind of thing. And I find that ironic. You know, it's like, yeah, you really can't trust your neighbor, so to speak. And even though they say and they promise and they think, you know, we're in this together and we're gonna figure this out together, when it really gets down to it, it's every man for himself or every school for themselves, however you want to look at it. And,
yeah.
And so I find that interesting. But I just get a sense that, these schools, they have to make this decision, relatively quickly about what they're going to do and how they're going to handle the season. But I think part of it too is kind of it's geography and philosophy, right? So you have that Southeastern Conference, you would say probably more conservative, maybe a little bit more rural. And then you have kind of the upper Northeast, you know, you have places like Pennsylvania, you have Ohio, you have Michigan, you have Illinois, that there's a kind of that liberal bias in some of that part of the country. And it's a more major population areas that are dealing with these conferences. So you have a philosophy that looks, you know, and conservatives, liberals kind of look at this, you know, in different light, this pandemic in general terms. I don't want to just stereotype everyone, but it does play into it. You know, the geography and philosophy of these conferences plays into things. And Dave McCann talked about it last night on our show, where he's like, You got California in the Pac-12, and
right.
You got Utah.
It makes things way different. Yeah, very different in terms of how we're going to just, like, from a governmental, like, I mean, you could see Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, just shutting it all down, saying we're not doing this. And the NCAA not having power to, you know, kind of move forward, or even the Pac-12 to try to move forward on its own without the support of the governor of the state of California. Scott, I've got good news for people out there, like BYU fans, who are wondering exactly where some of these games are going to be coming from this year. Well, with six games and the possibility maybe of a Big Ten or of a Big 12 matchup, possibly toward the beginning of the season, maybe even an ACC matchup because they're going to have a plus one. Well, don't worry. The Sun Belt has you covered, Scott.
Oh.
The Sun Belt has you covered. And that is, they've decided as a conference that they are going to go. Now, you know, everybody else is kind of either they're doing non-conference, or they're going to do full league games only, or they're going to do conference play plus one. You've seen that happen in a couple of these cases. But don't worry, because the Sun Belt is going to go eight conference games and a plus four format. Scott, this is the equivalent of, we're sending the kids all back to school 5 days a week.
It's a plus four,
okay. Which is, you know what? That's actually what every schedule is every year, right? It's like, you have like a plus three or a plus four. It'll be like, okay, I've got an FCS team I want to play and a few other cupcakes, and we'll try to figure it out. Well, so what are some of the teams in the Sun Belt, you might be asking yourself? Scott, I will give you the chance to look up.
Don't ask me to name them.
I want you to name two members of the Sun Belt.
Oh, let's see.
All you're doing is going, where is it sunny where people are wearing belts across the country?
Here, I got one. Southern Mississippi.
Okay, now hold on. That's not right at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
Memphis.
No, the school of Memphis. Okay. I'll give you two more guesses here.
Oh, wow. And I'm not looking this up, by the way.
No, I know.
I'm really not.
As you say that, though, I start to think you're looking
North
it up.
Texas State.
Oh, North Texas is not in there, but Texas State University is
in
there.
That's what I meant.
Okay. Yeah. Scott, you know how BYU's playing Northern Alabama? Well, don't worry, because the University of South Alabama is in the Sun Belt.
Oh, hey.
Just do all the directional Alabamas.
For a week.
If they could have played regular Alabama, South Alabama, Northern Alabama, throw in an Eastern Alabama somewhere, we have everybody covered. All right, we'll take the break here. I'll have a couple more members of the Sun Belt League when we come back. Stay with us here on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio. Our MVPs are next. Stay with us. Hey, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, and I'm Alex Keery. He is Scott Mitchell. Scott Mitchell in about, I'd say 15 minutes here. We get going in the 8 o'clock hour. Going to voice his displeasure with the Jazz-Lakers game from last night. The Jazz, by the way, are tipping off against Memphis tomorrow at 12:30.
Wow.
Ugh. See, this is the other thing. Does this feel like the NBA season? Hey, why don't you go ahead and get fired up on that 12:30 tip-off?
Yeah, it's like the Olympics.
It's the Olympics. You go, I got my 3 a.m. alarm set for me to be able to watch the summer games over there in Tokyo. Oh, boy, Tokyo's having a hard time. They say if this thing doesn't get close, if we don't get close to figuring this thing out, they said next year it won't. They're not going to keep postponing it. It's done.
It's just going to cancel.
Yeah, and the other thing is that if next year ends up being affected, the year after or the Winter Olympics, obviously they go, well, we don't know if we're going to do that either. It's wild, wild times. Those are the most. Scott,
you know, I just
Olympics
get,
are just
I
amazing.
I just want to get through today.
Right.
I want to get through tomorrow. I don't want to get through next summer. that's way too far right.
Yes,
now.
I agree. I don't even, I just like, if you're starting to talk to me about spring NCAA football, I'm going to go nuts here. You know what we need? A little bit of positivity. Let's roll out the old MVPs here. Let's do it.
Unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player.
Yeah, according to Alex.
Uh-huh.
According to Scott. Most valuable player.
Mm-hmm. Scott, go ahead and go first, because I know that you're. I know that yours is. We'll probably end up spending a lot of time on yours, just because yours is kind of a fan favorite of the show, and this is somebody who comes up really as often as will allow you to bring this person up. We do this. So roll out your MVP here for us.
All right, my MVP is Gardner Minshew, who, as we know, played collegiately. Well, he was at East Carolina, then he grad transferred to. Washington State.
Yeah, beat BYU as a Pirate.
Yes.
Came over and played for the Pirate at Washington State.
And now he's kind of a Jaguar/Pirate of his own. but he's this improbable and certainly, you know, it came out of left field player who just was phenomenal in the Pac-12 and just flourished with Mike Leach. And then all of a sudden he went to Jacksonville, who had Nick Foles, who just won the Super Bowl and the MVP for the Eagles. And you're like, well, you know, he's not going to be the quarterback over Nick Foles. And, well, he turns out to be the quarterback Foles.
Plus, he's not kind of a character. He is one. He's got that massive mustache. He wears the headbands. He looks like he's straight out of the 70s. He wears the never nude shorts from Arrested Development.
Yeah,
he wears the
and he's got that
Tobias
Fünke.
Yes, he's got the same mustache
from the 1970s.
But anytime he can find his way. Now the problem was that he found himself on the COVID.
Yes,
the NFL's COVID list, which was either you had contact with or you have tested positive for.
Right.
Which
is somewhat controversial, but
it's a weird list. But so, I mean, we found out today that what's his name? Matthew Stafford,
yeah.
Who had tested positive yesterday during our show, had a false positive and is now released from the COVID list from the NFL. It seems very weird.
So Gardner Minshew, to me, the reason he's the MVP is here's a guy who I just love all of what I've set up here. He's just this unassuming, unconventional guy. And
he's not unassuming. He thinks the world of himself.
He probably does. Yeah, anyone who can just, you know, own wearing that mask, the mustache and the shorts is definitely. But he had a comment. Do we have audio?
Oh yeah, I've got it. I've got the Minshew comment.
This was his take on COVID.
So this is his MVP comment. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Correct. You know, did not contract the virus. It took one luck at me, ran the other way. It's probably in its best interest. So here we are. We're back on Tuesday, ready to roll. Excited to go play some football.
The virus took one look at me and ran the other way, probably in its best interest. I love how he's looking out for the COVID-19 virus. Good for him.
And I just found that to be humorous and just a great attitude about that. But it's that attitude that really will make him play better, because this is a guy who can just play loose and free, has nothing to lose, and he just kind of has that, that laissez-faire attitude all the time. And I found that to be a very endearing comment today. Definitely MVP worthy.
At some point, I'm still waiting to see, because he had like a couple flashes of brilliance, but he's also really short. I mean, he's kind of that Drew Brees height. You know, he's not really like he's not the prototypical quarterback. But how does a guy like Gardner Minshew survive then? If you were to say, hey man, here are some tips I want to give you. You're undersized. How does a guy like Gardner Minshew survive in the NFL?
When you're productive, production is production, and it doesn't matter really at what level, and it doesn't matter, you know, kind of the surroundings. They talked about Kurt Warner, who was very successful in arena football, and that there's something about they just have an ability to make decisions, make throws, read defenses. And guys have it or they don't. And I think that's the one thing about Gardner Minshew is he really his ability to do that shone through. And it doesn't matter your size, doesn't matter a lot of time your arm strength. I mean, a guy like Joe Montana didn't really have this big, strong John Elway arm, but he had an ability to throw the football in the right place at the right time and with whatever velocity he needed. And Gardner Minshew is kind of showing that, because I was skeptical. I was like, there's no way.
Right.
No way this guy. But given the right offense and the right circumstances, when a guy's, like I said, when a guy's productive, he's just productive, and he finds a way to get it done.
We like the underdog anyway, too.
But yeah, but it's this attitude is one that, like, there's a lot of pressure in playing quarterback, and you've got to be able to laugh at yourself. You've got to be able to not get bent out of shape about certain things and just let things just flow off your back if you're going to stick around and play, because there's tremendous pressure, and being able to handle it in a good-natured way goes a lot longer than, say, like Ryan Leaf kind of freaking out at reporters and all those things. And a lot of guys, you look at a guy like Brett Favre, who could kind of, you know, ah shucks and let it roll off of his back kind of thing. It's a great demeanor and personality to have to be a good quarterback.
As a 12-year-old living in Texas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area in 1993, I was just having a regular old summer. But it was one of these, like, we would go to Ranger games. And one of the summers, I think the year before this, Nolan Ryan, who pitched for the Texas Rangers, of course, during much of my youth, had gotten his...
Well, and everyone else's youth.
And everybody else's been pitching a long time. He got thrown out of a game for throwing at one of the Oakland A's. And I was in the crowd, and the entire outfield started throwing garbage on the warning track. And it took him forever, because you don't throw out Nolan Ryan. Right. And then the very next year, that was 1992. 1993 happens, and on this day, August 4th, 1993... which is why he's my MVP, Nolan Ryan. This happened.
Well, you could see that Nolan was hitting Robin right on the top of his head, so he probably hurt his hand a little bit in that thing, and he did get one good lick in on an uppercut.
The day that Nolan Ryan gave some high heat to Robin Ventura, the second-year player out of the Chicago White Sox, Robin Ventura, like a fool, charged the mound on the old man and got immediately put in a headlock and was beaten to smithereens by the old Nolan Ryan. That was 27 years ago to this day, to this evening, that Nolan Ryan did it. And about 3 or 4 weeks later, we started up school in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I was starting up, I think, sixth or seventh grade. And people already had the T-shirt, Scott. It was this. It was the front page of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram printed on a white T-shirt, and it said, "Don't mess with Texas." And it was Nolan Ryan punching the heck out of Robin Ventura. I'll always remember that day. Don't 27, mess with Texas. 27 years ago this evening. So those are our MVPs. You can catch our MVPs every night right here at 7:50.
I was a big fan of Nolan Ryan's.
He was just fun to
He's
watch.
He's one of my favorite guys of all time.
Jeremy and I went down this weird rabbit hole there. We just started watching Nolan Ryan videos. I'm like, look at his mechanics. Look at the guy. He was your old neighbor. Take out the garbage and throw a perfect fastball at 99 miles an hour. Yeah. Just amazing. It was amazing. All right, we're taking the break here. We're going to come back. We've got more to go on the program. Our next hour, we're going to kick things off talking about the Utah Jazz. They're 1-2 in the bubble. Tomorrow, 12:30 matchup against the Memphis Grizzlies. Scott is none too pleased. Even though they were much improved against the Lakers last night, still, Scott wants to see some production. We'll also talk with Jeremiah Jensen from KSL 5 Television.
KSL's unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome on in and welcome back, or welcome for the first time this evening, wherever you find yourself. Thanks for being a part of KSL's Unrivaled. Now here's the deal. We always start off each hour with the cut, and that's coming up, I promise. But I wanted to just point out that the bubble has been a super weird place. I have not felt normal about it. I have felt 100% good about the fact that the NBA has kept all of their guys in the negative testing, Scott Mitchell. I feel good about that. But at the same time, here was the kicker for me. I watched Devin Booker's game-winning shot today. It wasn't today, but it was last night. It was against the Clippers. But I rewatched it today because I put it at full volume. And it was just 1,000%. It was just like they had crowd noise that they piped in. This guy just put a dagger in the heart of the LA Clippers. I mean, this is the Phoenix Suns who stink, Scott. And Devin Booker, on this beautiful fadeaway at the last second, swishes and beats the Clippers on a buzzer beater. And the virtual fans were the exact same sound throughout the thing. It was like chemically produced in a bubble, this basketball game, and it just did not feel right. I felt a little bit dirty being a part of it and watching it, but I don't know. I guess being excited about the fact that basketball is back has the price that we're going to pay. We're going to kick off the hour, though, talking about some things that Scott observed last night in the Jazz-Lakers game, and the Jazz lost to the Lakers. It's our 8:05 cut. Let's just jump right to it here.
The cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, so right off the bat, Scott, what's your problem with the Jazz? Because I thought it was their best game in the bubble so far.
Exactly. It was their best game, and it wasn't even close to good enough. Now, here's the thing. When you watch a team like the Lakers, and as I was watching this game, I'm sitting here going, it's almost like LeBron is just toying with the Jazz. Like the Jazz are like giving it a Herculean effort. You know, they're just really trying. You know, you can just see they're out there playing, and it's like the Lakers are in second gear. And at any moment, they're just going to just explode. And that's what you have when you have a player like LeBron or an Anthony Davis, where these guys, they just scare you. When you go into the game and you're in the arena with them, you're like, these guys scare me. James Harden scares me. Paul George scares me. Kawhi Leonard scares me. You know, Giannis scares me. And so there's these players in the NBA, the superstars. Damian Lillard scares me, and they scare you in the sense that you know that every night they're just going to have an amazing game. I mean, we talked about LeBron. It's like for almost 1,000 games, he's at least scored in double figures in almost 1,000 games in his career.
In a row.
That just consistent level of play. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell is certainly, I feel, giving every the greatest effort he possibly can give, and it feels like he's kind of a certain type of player, but I don't feel like right now he's that guy that just goes, I can take over a game. Like, I can just, you know, I mean, and he did a great job of closing out last night, but it's not every night. And they're sometimes just scratching your head going, whoa, what's that decision? And what, you know, you just don't get this sense that he's, I want to say, top shelf. You know, maybe he's an all-star-ish type of player, but he's not a guy that walks in an arena and the opposing team goes, phew, there's, we can't stop Donovan Mitchell.
Well, but even, you know, I was talking about Devin Booker, and I don't like the Phoenix Suns at all. Maybe Ricky Rubio, but I do not like the Phoenix Suns, and I hate Devin Booker. And the thing is that as soon as he put that shot up, it was probably, like, in my mind, I was like, oh boy, he's about to light this thing up, and he won the game. And I looked at the Jazz roster and went, okay, who on the roster could do that? Beat the Clippers on a fadeaway last shot? And the answer is, maybe Donovan Mitchell. And the answer might have been a healthy Bojan Bogdanovic. We've seen him do that against, right, you know, big teams. But other than that, maybe Jordan Clarkson. And again, and that's your sixth man off the bench, by the way. So I don't know how to feel about that, because I'm going, I know that Devin Booker is a different style. And I know that the, you know, Phoenix Suns offense is on, you know, on some sort of weird offensive steroid where that's their style, right? They just try to score as many dang points as possible. I mean, everybody is trying to do that, but they don't really care. They're just trying to out-tempo you, and they'll score 120 points in a game, and they'll have a guy scoring 50 points in a game as well, Devin Booker usually. But, I mean, I thought the same thing where I was like, oh, well, I know that the Jazz are hoping for a superstardom from Donovan Mitchell. I know that that's something that comes up, and I know that people wonder if that's ever going to happen, right? Where you go, is that going to be a possibility of him being this superstar-level guy? And Devin Booker's not a superstar, by the way. That's the level I'm talking about is Devin Booker is like a really nice player, but he's no Kawhi. He is no Giannis. He's no Damian Lillard. I mean, it scares the heck out of me to think that, you know, you're going to sign up for either Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert for a long, long time for lots and lots and lots of money, not both of them, and you're not going to get a superstar level person out of either one of them, maybe.
Yeah, and you have to. I mean, you have to. I mean, the challenge with Rudy Gobert is he's in the wrong era. And I think Rudy is trying to expand his game offensively. I'm talking about offensively. And you look at some of these elite centers in the NBA right now, and they're more like power forwards in a 7'2", 3'4" body. And they're guys that can, and I shouldn't say a power forward, like a stretch forward, that a guy who can shoot a 3-point shot. I mean, it's one of the most impressive things I think in the world that I'm seeing is you have these amazingly athletic, you know, big men. I mean, you'd never see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Shaquille O'Neal or right, someone like that, you know, out on the perimeter like this. And it's just really, really an impressive thing to watch, you know, watch happen. And you see Anthony Davis do it. And, you know, it's just he guarded every player on the Utah Jazz. Like, not only guarded him, but, like, shut him down. I mean, he shut Rudy down. He shut, you know, Donovan down. Right. I mean, and he's guarding
all these
guys. He
had 42 points. You're not going to see a 42-point night out of Rudy Gobert, obviously. And it's something that happens every fifth game or something like that, right, with Anthony Davis.
And I know that Rudy is a challenge defensively at the rim. I get that. And I just – I'm still yet to hear or have it explained to me why he changes the game. You know, you hear all these NBA insiders, you hear all these coaches, and you hear all these, you know, things happening about how, you know, he's a guy that, you know, just changes people's games. And you're like, yeah, but I don't see it. I mean, the Lakers still scored 116 points on the Jazz and didn't have any problem, you know. And you would think, well, he could match up with AD, and he didn't, you know. And so I have yet to see, or when the Jazz get in the playoffs and they play the Houston Rockets and they just get torched. And it's like, where's the Gobert factor there? And I understand, and I believe they've maxed, and they're maxing his talent. I think if the Utah Jazz do one thing, they are great at developing players, and they're great at getting the max potential out of these players. I just don't know that they have a superstar on their roster that they could max out. And I'm not sure how they get that. And I don't know that they get it because Utah's not an appeal. and they're always good enough to be not bad enough to get in the lottery.
Well, here's the thing, too. So this was the one, too, where I think a lot of people looked at it and went, okay, you had, you know, Jalen Rose. This is something I want to play for Jeremiah next segment, this Jalen Rose, you know, talking about – and national guys do this all the time. They'll go, Rudy Gobert, I just don't see him in Utah. And that's a massive compliment. What they're saying is he's better than that market that he's in currently, which is a weird thing. What they're saying is oh, he's so amazing in Utah, but he's in Utah. He's got to play in Chicago or Miami or New York. You know, obviously that's one that always comes up. And I just am like, there is an obsession, obviously, with the idea nationally that Donovan Mitchell needs to go somewhere else. And that's something I guess it's because, and that's the thing that you should look at that as the massive compliment, Scott, and just go, look, everybody from all these other places wish that they had Donovan Mitchell. The biggest markets wish that they had Donovan Mitchell. But they also think that they could finally turn him into a superstar. You know what I mean? But it's always been the opposite here in the state of Utah. We develop guys that are amazing. I mean, what guys, I think about guys who have left here and have gone on to be way more amazing. Think of Deron Williams. His best years were here. Think of... you know, guys who have this amazing future ahead of them, and then they leave Utah thinking, okay, finally I got out of that mid market or small market, and they go to the bigger market and they go, oh shoot, I should have stayed there. And I hope that's not what we end up learning from Donovan Mitchell. But I look at the situation that they're in right now, and at 1-3, I've been told I've been told that that's okay. I'm not a big fan of the idea of tanking in the bubble, because what that really means is you've never even got ready for anything if you're tanking in the bubble and then getting ready for those playoffs. Fine, they fall to a 6 seed. That could be a good thing for them. Fine. But I'm being told that it's an okay deal that they're 1-2 right now. They take on Memphis tomorrow. I'm not sure how to feel about it. We're going to talk to Jeremiah Jensen about this very thing. You're going to hear that sound from Jalen Rose on ESPN saying, oh, yeah. He's got to go somewhere else. Stay with us. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio. We got that. Plus much more. We have our 2-minute drill coming up in a little while. Oh, just so much more stuff. So stay with us right here on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. We just got done talking about some of our beef with some of the other media people across the country. But also, Scott, you did have feelings about this Jazz team. And I think that part of it is anytime you lose to the Lakers, you'll be ready to just let anybody go. Scott's ready to fire anybody.
We've been losing to the Lakers for like years.
Trade them all!
Like from the time I was a kid growing up, it was like we could never beat the Lakers.
That's true.
And we finally did. But
it was a frustrating game. And I know that there are a lot of issues that the Jazz have, but this is the one that we brought Jeremiah Jensen in from KSL 5 Television to listen to what we've all been listening to today, which is Jalen Rose talking about Donovan Mitchell's future in Utah.
Here's what I'll say about his future in Utah. When I look at the 2017 draft, the other max caliber players are Jason Tatum and Bam Adebayo. I see their futures with those teams. I don't necessarily see that with Donovan Mitchell in Utah. So, Jay, to answer your question, don't be surprised if when it's time for those other guys to get extensions, that he doesn't sign one. I don't know if he's there long-term to be their best player.
Is that kind of an auto response, Jared, for like people in general? They go, well, look, I wouldn't want to be there. So obviously Donovan Mitchell doesn't want to be in Utah long-term.
That's all I can make of that, because he didn't really give any reasoning as to why Donovan would make this decision.
I just don't really see him there.
Why not? I mean, Donovan's been great here. He's happy here. He's the star player. And I think we can talk about who's going to be here next year and what's going on with the roster and the dynamic. I think there could be things that are changed. Could be major changes in the offseason. But
is that the possibility of Rudy maybe not being around?
I think it's – okay, so just based on logic, Not saying anything's going to happen.
Can't keep them both.
But it's much more likely. You could keep them both, but you really hamstring yourself moving forward financially. But if you're going to move forward and move somebody, a big name on your roster, it's going to be Rudy before Donovan. That's just my feeling.
But it's because of the position of center and the way the game is played now. I
mean, Rudy doesn't score 25 points per game.
No, and when he does score, it's always around the basket. And you have – I mean, you look at Anthony Davis.
Come on, he was 6-for-6 last night.
I understand that, but it's 6-for-6
from the field, Scott.
Right, but when your shooting range is like half a foot, you know, you're gonna make six. You might make 5 or 6, but the center position has just changed. And I look at this, and it's like the Utah Jazz have always had these, you know, uniquely skill-setted centers. Like Mark Eaton was a you know, he's really good on defense, but he's not an offensive center. And he was even good in an era where centers were under the basket and they had their back to the basket kind of thing. But the Jazz just they need that. They need three players. You know, if you're going to win the championship, you kind of need three players. And Donovan Mitchell, I'm not so sure he's that complete player yet, where he can just take over a game at the end of a game and just win it for you. I don't know that teams go, oh, man, we fear playing Donovan Mitchell. I mean, so he's even a question mark. But that second player, I don't know that the Jazz have it. Mike Connolly, I just don't see a lot of upside on him. And Bojan is, you know, he's like that fourth player. You know, I don't know that he's your second option.
Why do we obsess with this, JJ, like this idea of, yeah, but they're too good. They won't be here for very long. And with Donovan Mitchell, for example, like – everybody reads into and the chemistry questions come up about Donovan and Rudy, even after, you know, you see alley-oop after alley-oop that they've been throwing to one another. And like the whole thing with me is this Jazz team, as it's presently sort of put together, I don't know exactly what the exact need is. Is it Mike Conley going away? Is it, like, in the long term, you can't afford to have a super maxed out Rudy who's making $60 million a year in the last couple of years of his contract? And then because I think the reality is the fan prefers a Donovan Mitchell player anyway.
And Rudy knows that.
He has to know
Rudy
that.
Has said that publicly to ESPN recently. So there's definitely a dynamic here with this team that just didn't work the way they wanted it to this year. And you're even seeing it inside the bubble. And then with Bojan out, I think it's even more glaring. They're going to have to do some things in the offseason to kind of make this work. But trust me, Donovan Mitchell is the centerpiece in all this. Donovan Mitchell is the man moving forward. He's the face of the franchise.
Right.
And so –
does he believe that?
Oh, I'm sure he does.
Because all the responses are, oh, he's going to go to Chicago. He's going to go to New York. He's going to go to
Chicago. And look, I don't know what Jalen – I don't know where that came from. But trust me, I've talked to people in other markets in the country. The New York Knicks fan base and media is already pushing for Donovan Mitchell. I don't know if you heard this, but there were Miami Heat fans posing as racist Jazz fans, putting comments on Donovan Mitchell's social media to try to make him more angry.
This is
a real thing.
That's wrong.
People are awful.
So this is going on, and there's all these forces at play from other places in the league trying to pry Donovan out of this market because there is this perception that you can do so. There's this perception that why would a star player who can go anywhere they want to play in Utah? And we haven't had any reason to believe, other than the way that some fans were treating him on social media about social injustice, to think that anybody here has anything negative to say about Donovan, that Donovan has anything negative to say about our community.
Right.
So where is this coming from? It's not here. It's somewhere else.
It feels like to me, from Donovan's side of it, though, from day one, he really embraced being here, even more so than like Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward, just, I don't know, there was just always something just off, but it just got a sense with, you know, Donovan going and visiting people, and shoot, he went to the high school state championships my son played in, and my son got a picture with him, you know, and he's just out, he's social, he's embraced the community. I just remember watching him in that first summer league when he came here, and just how he just kind of has gone for it, and what he what he kind of exploded onto the scene as a rookie, and he just to me feels like he does want to be here. And you have the Miller family, Gail Miller, and they have a special love for the Utah Jazz, and there are players who have stuck here and been here their whole entire careers, you know, John Stockton, Karl Malone, and they've done well, and the people embrace Utah Jazz players. And you know, I know he's from back east, I know he's from the New York area, but this could be a place that he could do very well for himself if he was going to stay around, and maybe he's the guy they do build a franchise around. I don't know.
If you look at the way that it's set up and the way that we hear these things, and this periodically pops back up again, and Donovan Mitchell has to be, you know, aware of the noise that goes on with this. Is that just the thing that you deal with as a pro? And I guess maybe this is more for Scott. I mean, you just have to deal with the noise that just goes, well, this is the way we think that you feel here, you know, and this is the way we're going to treat you while you're here. And despite the fact that the player might feel totally different than when everybody else is telling them they're supposed to feel.
Some players like the noise and thrive on it. You look at a guy like Michael Jordan, he liked to pick up on any little thing he could to kind of fuel himself. And other guys are like, you know, just kind of block it out, don't listen to any of it. And, you know, I think ultimately the players just they make those decisions for themselves and what they want to hear and what they listen to and what they don't and what kind of impact it has on them.
All right. JJ, thanks for the breakdown.
Donovan's not going anywhere, everybody.
I don't think
feel
he
better
is.
About it. Feel good about
he would
it.
Have to turn down a max contract from the Jazz, so it really starts with the money.
And here's
that's
the
all
other thing. When people worry about it, too, the Jazz can match whatever other people bring to the table.
So, yeah.
And they'll be able to.
I wish we had some time to go into the contract details, but it's probably going to bore people. But just just feel confident, Jazz fans. Donovan's going to take an extension, max offer. He's going to be here for another 4 years.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about people we hate the most in sports. Enough to put in your obituary. How much you hated Tom Brady like one lady did in Buffalo. Who is that person that you just could not stand so much that the word hate crossed your lips about a certain sport, about a certain athlete in any sport? Stay with us. More to go right here. It's KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Alex Keery. He is Scott Mitchell. Everything's still okay over there, Scott? You're doing all right? I can't see you, so I never know.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Oh, okay.
Are you kidding?
Oh, phew. I was like, you know, waiting for your response.
Let's see.
Bated breath.
I haven't. If I was being like completely candid with you, Alex,
yeah, what?
I haven't left my house in 2 days.
That's well. Some people are
like at all.
Some people are like, whatever, Mitchell. Try 4 months.
Right. A lot of it is I have had a special interest in this preliminary Chad.
Oh my goodness!
Hearing.
Scott calls me up. I get like middle of the day calls from Scott Mitchell, and I'm like, what are we going to talk about the show? And you're like. No, did you just hear what happened? Did you hear the phone call? You know, and I start going, oh, yeah, because we got the same thing going on at our house. We have
you know what's kind of exciting about
quite
it?
Quite the interest. What?
She's up next Monday.
Oh, so okay.
So they're going to do the same thing again next Monday.
I think, you know, my wife at one point goes, you know, this just proves that this is not real, or not real. This just proves that this is, you know, TV, you know, courtroom cases. You know, they got to speed those things up. They got to make them dramatic because these are like, at this particular time, I would like to show the state's exhibit number 20, and I would like to offer it as evidence for the trial. I have no objection, Your Honor. Okay, it will be admitted into a piece of evidence. I'm going, boy, that took 45 seconds of my life away of just watching that exchange, but.
Oh, but it's all worth it when you get those explosive moments, which there were.
I don't know. You know, I haven't seen it yet, I guess. I mean, I was.
You haven't?
There was definitely. I'm just saying, look, I was expecting there to be. When they said, we've got some jail cell phone call. Yeah, but I thought it was going to be like, case closed, dunzo. You know what I mean? Like, wild stuff. Instead, it was a lot of mumbling and a lot of like.
Oh, you're talking about the jailhouse one.
Yes. There's like a lot of winking over the phone. Yeah, I was like,
right.
Oh, they're searching the house, Scott.
But they're outside by the tree at the pond. You remember that?
Oh, my gosh. This is awful. Like, it is insane that we, like, make our... You know, what's interesting is that, like, we work for a media outlet, and they wanted to get this... His lawyer was moving to not have any of this broadcast.
Right.
Look.
No. His lawyer wanted it. The state, the prosecution...
Oh, the state didn't want to broadcast. Yeah, okay, but here's the thing. Every news outlet on the planet was like, how dare you? We have First Amendment rights, and we have clients who want to
have COVID where everybody's home, and they want to watch this.
How dare you? We're trying to bring information to the people. I mean, it just shows you, like, as a public, the stuff that we want to entertain ourselves with is pretty dark stuff most of the time.
Well, here's the thing. It's crazy, but I know one of the individuals in here well.
I know.
That's the part that's really hard. In fact, I was going through some.
You're talking about the court bailiff?
Yeah.
Madam Bailiff, if you could enter that.
I was going through over the weekend all this memorabilia I have. So photos.
Yeah.
There's Chad on my youth football team. Just right there.
Oh, boy. What kind of football player was he?
Yeah. Not very good.
I would imagine the focus was right on Scott Mitchell.
He was destined for other things.
Oh, my gosh. I just imagine, like, any team that Scott Mitchell was on, even through his years at Utah, the only focus was on where is Scott Mitchell on the field or, oh, boy, here comes Mitchell into the game.
All right, so eighth grade, we had green uniforms.
Why? Was this a junior high situation?
No, this was like the city league.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And I was a quarterback. I had number 13. And I wore a neck brace.
Why? Oh, you mean like a neck roll?
A neck roll,
yeah. Like the old Brian Cox neck roll. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love those. Yeah. That was the thing, you know.
It was more like Steve Grogan, which you may not remember.
No, but I do. It was almost like, what is this thing? How can you play with this thing on? And if you're playing quarterback with that on, that looked really weird. All right.
And it was weird.
Scott, let's talk a little bit about something here. I want to roll out a little something here. And that is this obituary that was found. It's been floating around the internet. And this obituary is from a woman named Carol Scarsella. Carol Scarsella is a woman from Buffalo. She died on July 19th. And she was known as a loving grandmother and an incredible woman. Great. In her obituary, which has now made the rounds in all of the AFC East, I would assume, she put that she hated, here's what it says, love New York Yankees and LeBron James, and that she hated Tom Brady.
And this is her obituary. Like, this is her obituary. You're going to put the most important things in your life in.
Now, I will say this. Buffalo is a... The thing is the picture they chose to put in the newspaper of Carol Scarsella is Carol Scarsella with a big old fat cigarette in her hand, okay?
Right.
Beloved mother... cherished grandmother, and it goes through all these things, but then it says, she loved the New York Yankees and LeBron James. She hated Tom Brady. When her children were growing up, she was involved in their school PTA. They moved right on and just went, oh, and she was involved in the PTA after that. But hated is capitalized. There's nothing else. Her kids' names are not capitalized in this. There's not one thing capitalized in this whole obituary except for she hated Tom Brady.
But I don't blame her. I mean, if I was in the AFC East,
if you're a Buffalo Bills
fan,
well, she didn't say I love the Buffalo Bills. It's love the Yankees, love LeBron James, hate Tom Brady.
Look, if you're from Buffalo, you have to love the Buffalo Bills. That's just a given. They don't need to put that in there. It's like everyone's a Bills fan.
Scott,
because no one moves there, Alex. Everyone's from there. They never leave there, and they're Buffalo Bills fans. I get it.
Have you?
And
ever...
I get hating Tom Brady.
I hate
Tom Brady.
Who would you put in your obituary from your world, from your life of sports? Who would you put in your obituary that you hated? And say Scott Mitchell. He loved the University of Utah. Loves fishing. Hates .. Who would it be?
Here's the thing: is I hope that by the time I get to that where I'm going to die,
you're not feeling that. You're not feeling
that. I don't hate anyone anymore. If it were to happen today, then it would be someone in the lines of...
Will you please take a picture of you smoking a cigarette even though you've never smoked in your life?
It would be like Jim Zorn and Bobby Ross.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. He hated Jim Zorn and Bobby Ross. But see, those are run-of-the-mill names that don't mean much. That means there's actual personal feelings on it.
Here's the thing. I hate Michael Jordan.
Okay, there you go.
But I love Michael Jordan.
But you're a Jazz fan, so you got to kind of hate him. Yeah, you got to kind of have
that. I despise him for that reason. I despise him and love him for the same reason. Because here's a guy that just was so competitive and just, you know, he just was a fierce competitor. And that fierce competitiveness, because it's not even the push-off on Brian Russell. That's not the one that really bothers me. It's that he stole the ball the previous possession from Karl Malone. Karl Malone had the ball in the low post. He was probably going to score. The Jazz were going to probably win the game or, you know, at least go up enough to win the game. And Jordan, like, he was sneaky.
You hate him because you wouldn't think to yourself, no, man, she has a hate for Tom Brady because he's got that smirk on his face and he's beating you. So he's beating you, and he's got a smirk on his face. Like, just imagine that slow-mo. You can all picture it when he won, like, maybe his first or second
Do you know why people
Super Bowl.
Hate Tom?
He's got the hat on, and he puts his hands on his head slow motion, points at somebody, and he's like, I can't believe it.
But can I tell you why they hate Tom Brady?
Why do they? Because he's a winner.
No. Because they're like, how in the heck does he do this? Because he's not that good an athlete. He's not. He's not athletic like Michael Jordan.
No.
He's not athletic for a quarterback.
And that's why he's able to go this many years, right?
I mean, any quarterback today is more athletic than Tom Brady. Any quarterback in Tom Brady's era is more athletic than Tom Brady. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, maybe Eli Manning. Okay, maybe Eli Manning is less athletic. But
but still, sneaky like a fox too, though.
Right, and it's in spite of his – He feels average. He doesn't feel – I mean, I know he has a look and he has this demeanor and he's a fierce competitor and he has, like, supreme confidence. He really does. I mean, he has these traits that, you know, from a leadership perspective. And he's really worked extremely diligent on being so efficient. You know, his mechanics and everything are so good. But he's not like Dan Marino, you know. He just kind of, it's like, how does this guy keep doing this? And he does, and he did, and he's.
I'm gonna come up with a list of people that I would consider putting in the obituary for sports people that I don't like.
All right,
you can hit us with your text 575-00. We've got our 2-minute drill coming up next. Amazingly, more Buffalo Bills news as really? Well. So stay with us right here. It's KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio. Stay with us right here. All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Got a text. Is this show a rerun?
Yeah.
Is this show a rerun?
A rerun?
I'm like, the Jazz lost to the Lakers last night. What do you want to hear?
That's a rerun for the last 40 years. Of course it is.
They take on the Memphis Grizzlies tomorrow at 12:30. Nothing says primetime basketball like a 12:30, like a lunchtime tip-off of a Jazz game. That's ridiculous. I'm watching the Trailblazers and the Rockets right now. Portland's up 73-71 over Houston. That's a good – I like that matchup. I like that in the playoffs, too. I'd like to see that. What's his name?
Want to know what I'm watching?
Oh, boy. If it's Court TV, you need to shut her down, buddy.
No, it's not Court TV.
Oh, okay.
I'm just asking. You want to know?
Yes, of course I want to know.
Oh, all right. I'm watching –
Court TV.
No, I'm watching the Disney Channel.
Oh,
the Disney Plus.
The Disney Plus. We're doing a radio show. You can't stream –
I watch it in the breaks, and then I put it on pause.
Okay, what are you watching, Moana?
No, I'm watching Davy Crockett and the River of Pirates.
Nothing says I grew up in the early 70s like like watching Davy Crockett and the River Pirates. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
The River Pirates.
With Fess Parker. And
there's no way that they had to put at the front end of that movie – may have some questionable content on how they depicted people in the early part of the United States.
Yeah, it's not politically correct. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. In today's terms, they had to put down pipe use, cigar use, tobacco. You know,
yeah, and this is Disney too, by the way.
I know. I'm telling you, because Disney's in the vault and they're going, oh boy, we got some weird stuff back here, don't we? Well, anyway, yes, we're live. Portland up 75-71 over Houston currently in the third quarter. Texter also saying, what about Greg Ostertag? We can always bring that guy back. If you were talking about the Jazz, wondering about who those big men are going to be who are playing for him. I don't know. Ostertag was funny because Tag used to – my very first job in radio, Greg Ostertag used to call up. We didn't call him. He would call up and go, hey, man, it's Tag. Put me through. And I'd be like – and I was like – I remember first like day on the job, I'm like, some guy named Tag. And I remember this producer rolling his eyes going, oh, geez, Ostertag's calling again. And they put him through because it was like, I guess.
You got to.
You got to put Tag through.
Let me tell you. At least he could say something weird. If he called our radio show and said that, we would put him through.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'd be happy to do that.
I get nervous about him cussing, but, you know.
Well, we got a delay. Yeah. You delay me all the time. What do you mean?
I hit the dump button on Scott all day. All right. It's a two-minute drill. We got to fire up the music here, and I wanted to bring some up. Scott, by the way. People who I hate enough that I would put them in my obituary from the world of sports. It's the whiny faces. And for me, when I was a kid, there was no more of a whiny face than when you – and I wasn't even like – I didn't really care that much about the Eastern Conference because I, you know, I was a big Supersonics fan and everything. But Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah.
When he
– He tops the list.
And you know what? Bill Laimbeer – and you should have more sympathy for the guy, but when he had the plastic face mask on – that made me hate him even more.
Well, he earned that plastic face.
I know. He was always getting an elbow to the face. He's always getting, you know what? And he deserved those elbows to the face.
I mean, you talk about superhero names, plastic face. There you go, Bill.
Oh, yeah. But I think Christian Laettner, that, you know, he got a lot of hate. I didn't hate
and
him.
And he relished much. That, by the way.
He loved it.
Yeah.
If you watch that
documentary, did Laimbeer.
I think it was a 30 for 30 that was, you know, about hate on Christian. I hate Christian Laettner. I'm trying to think of other guys. Really watching these two teams match up against each other. I think about Chris Paul. And now he plays for the Oklahoma City Thunder, but I think about that Houston. Remember the Houston Chris Paul?
Yes.
Just that face he had? The whiny face. Throw in a James Harden, nasty-looking face when he would push off of somebody and get called for an offensive foul, and the face that he makes right then, that's the guy I can't stand. And I think I've heard he's a very pleasant person, and I've not heard that about Chris Paul. So Chris
I'm not Paul's a fan. I'm not a fan of LeBron.
Well, you know, but LeBron's like too good of a dude, man.
I know, but he's he.
You think it's fake?
It goes. It's the bot championships. It's like
it's him trying to copyright Taco Tuesday. That rubbed me the wrong way too.
Yeah, it's just like it's just a little bit too full of himself.
Sure.
A little bit disingenuous. The championships are kind of tainted for me. Don't meet his. He's a phenomenal talent, generational talent, unbelievable. But, I just don't like the business side of LeBron.
But the I hate LeBron would not get a lot of follows. I'm trying to think too.
It would get some Tom Brady.
There'd be a lot of Ute fans saying they hate Max Hall or they hate John Beck and
you know I don't think
Johnny
Utah
Harlan.
Fans care about Max Hall actually.
Quit it.
I don't think as much as he thinks
Scott,
they do. Or
listen, no, he doesn't.
As much
I don't
as
think
he hates
I think he would pretend. No, he wants to forget all that. I'm telling you right now, I can't go at dinner with my like friends that are Ute fans who will bring something up about Max Hall. They will bring something up about Max Hall every time. I'm just telling you, they don't forget.
Yeah, it's because they got under Max Hall's skin. And when you do that, then you win. When you get under someone's skin,
I
that
remember
means
exactly
you
where I was when we heard that Max Hall had been arrested. It was a bad day. Yeah. I was getting gas in the RV, headed down to BYU versus Texas, and I went, shut her down. We might as well turn it around. There's no point in taking this trip down. It's terrible. All right. Scott, here we go. Two-minute drill. Got some things I still want to bring up. I will say that there have been tweets going around today from people with blue check marks on Twitter, Scott, which of course means it's basically breaking news. But one that went out today was this I think it wasn't Brett McMurphy, but it was who was this? Now I've got to find it. But the idea was, it's from George Reister III. Okay, so here we go. This is a guy who he says he knows something about it. Former player in the Pac-12, fine. He says he's heard from multiple sources above coaches that a 64 team plus Notre Dame plus BYU super conferences that will break away from the NCAA in the next few years. Wow. Scott, do you feel like that's a true thing?
Something has to happen. I mean, because clearly it's not a, it's not really that. It's weird because it's not even a COVID thing, right? Well, it's bifurcated now as it is because the championship is outside of it. The way the leagues are set up, the whole system, but yet the NCAA kind of controls. They're like the police department or something. I don't know. It's just, and they tell you if you can go or you can't go, and it's so arbitrary about. It's a lot of their decisions, and it seems to favor certain conferences and certain teams, and others it doesn't. And I think it would be immensely more popular if it was done that way. I think you could really kind of take it to another level when you have that type of, and that's probably about the max number of teams that are, you know, that would make sense in that scenario for now, at least, or for a long time in the future. And I think it'd be interesting.
It would be. Speaking of things that would make things interesting in college football, or at least this might speed it up. This might be a good reason to speed up the process. The bowl system may change because of the coronavirus. I thought, okay, interesting. But the 42 bowls that are overseen by ESPN, because of all the tie-ins, they said with the current NCAA rules, teams with a losing record are eligible, but they have to have, you know, some exceptions in there. And the Pac-12, Big Ten, and the SEC, obviously they look at it and they go, well, this is a difficult year. They say that there are some teams that could likely get in based on just of the tie-ins they have of conferences, and because they're playing so few conference games, you could have a team that is 3-6 going to a bowl game, Scott.
This is the SEC rule, if you want my opinion, because they're forced to play each other,
right?
And so their teams are going to have
You're going to have a 3-6. You can have like a bunch of teams in the SEC, like a Georgia's 4-4. That's the best team that anybody's seen all season. You know, I mean, just
right. And awful. So, you know, getting those schools in because of the tie-in and who knows, this may start to change something where more conference games or it could, this whole realignment type of thing with this big super conference. These are the types of things that may,
oh man, I hope it
may change. It'll be fascinating to watch these teams play by,
it'll just be fascinating
by league
to me,
this year.
It'll be fascinating to me to watch BYU fans going, are we going to be invited? Just to see, because I think BYU would have to be a part of something like that, but just watching the sweat coming off the forehead of the athletic directors. All right, for Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Curie. We'll be back again tomorrow night. We'll have an update for you on that Jazz Memphis game that happens
update.
At 12:30
we'll
tomorrow. We'll have full breakdown tomorrow for Amber hitting the buttons. Jeremy, the producer, we'll talk to you tomorrow night, everybody.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.